a little bit of the history. Okay, and so now we have N players. And I'll get to an example. Okay, and what's going to happen and what I'm going to cover, you know, it's going to be little special cases and things like this. So, but we won't do the general thing, but you can define the general thing. Okay, so then you choose a, I can do this. Yeah, a strategy. Okay. Out of a set, SK of MK strategies. Okay, so I think, at least in the examples that I've written up notes for so far, it's going to be, there are two players and they're playing the same game and they, you know, and so the strategies are often the same set of strategies. So like the set of strategies could be the same for every player. Okay, and if that is true, that's called a symmetric game, all right? But you can define a game perfectly well where there's like a buyer and a seller, and then the buyer has, you know, strategies and the seller has strategies and you have an equivalent people. Okay, so this is, the definition is, this is the general definition. Okay, then, but then when I do examples, there will be lots of, you know, specialization to the example. And so then the specialization, the strategy vector then is S1, S2, okay. And so basically, each player out of the N players picked a strategy, all right? And then, okay, so this is called the strategy vector. And what's gonna happen is later on there's going to be a thing called mixed strategies, where basically you pick a strategy with a certain probability. And that's called the strategy profile. And every once in a while in the notes I slip and I use profile instead of vector, but in the special case where they're pure, they're the same thing. So it's not so terrible. Okay, and then, so then for each strategy, there's a payoff. There's a payoff function. Okay, and so it's usually called pi. Okay, so this is the payoff for the ith player. Okay, so there are n of these. Okay, and it maps from the space of all the strategies to r to the n, okay? And, there's pi. Sorry. Pi maps from the strategy space to r to the n, and then pi I is the payoff for the ith player. Okay, and then that's just some function. You know, it just, if everyone has one strategy, then you get another one. Okay, and so that's the strategy for the player. So it's r to the n because there's a payoff for every player. Okay, and so basically then you have a strategy, a payoff. Sometimes you have what's called a payoff vector. Dot, dot, dot. Pi n of s. Okay, so again, everybody picked the strategy and then there's a payoff. Okay, now, in a lot of what we're going to do where the players are equivalent. Okay, so if the players are all equivalent, then the strategy vector has the same thing, has the same entry for every player, and you know, it's related by symmetry, and then you just use pi. Okay, so there will be a lot of scalar pi happening. Yeah?
The strategy vector, is that a vector of a particular strategy or a vector of sets of strategies?
Okay, so this is the set of strategies, capital S. That's supposed to be capital S, okay? Okay, and then the vector is a set, is one, player one picks strategy one, and player two picks strategy two. And here, the labeling in the general case is, Like strategy one could be up and down, and strategy two could be left, middle, and right, and you know, each one has their own possible set of strategies in general. Okay. Okay, and so so now you specify the image. Okay, so there are two ways the games are typically specified. Okay, and I'm going to do the one that's more compact. It's the one that people tend to do. One way is to say, well, just write a tree, right? You say, okay, well, we take the first person, and then the first guy does this. He has one out of three, and this is player one. Okay, player two. Oh, sorry, it's still player one. This layer is player one, and he does strategy one, okay? And so then there's one, two, and three. And then player two, then you go through all of player two strategies, and then you get payoffs, okay? And then you just enumerate the payoffs for one, 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 two, one, three, et cetera. Okay, and you can go down that way. Okay, and this is called the extended form. Okay. But that's not usually, and sometimes it's done that way. Okay. But it turns out for two-player games, which I'm going to stay with for a while, there's a somewhat more compact way of doing it, which is called the normal form. Okay. So let me just say that, is it clear in terms of the game specification? Then you just have basically pi of 1, 1, that you have pi 1 here, and you specify all of these payoffs. You see what I mean? You just specify the numbers. Because all we're doing at this point is we're specifying the game. We're not doing anything yet. We're just saying, okay, well, we're going to say what the, you know, how many strategies of each kind there are. And when we interpret games, we're going to say, oh, this is going to correspond to, you know, so I'll do Prisoner's Dilemma, right? There's confess and there's defect. There's defect and cooperate. Okay, so we're going to call the strategy something, which corresponds to some story that we tell. But from the point of view of the game, it doesn't matter what the strategy is. All that matters is what the payoff is. Okay, so the mathematical specification, you don't actually have to specify what the strategy is, but for sake of remembering what's what, you do. So here's the case where every player has three strategies, and so you know, player one does strategy one, player two does strategy one, and there's a payoff for player one and a payoff for player two, okay, et cetera. And you just specify all the numbers, and there you are, okay. But now, and again, I'm going to mostly use, well, probably completely use normal form specification for the game, because it tends to be more efficient, and because it's, and sometimes you're just, you know, you're drawing all these lines, and you know, you don't really need all the lines. And so do I have normal? Oh yeah, so normal form is basically for two player games right now. Okay, and clearly you can do this for any number of players. It's an exponentially large specification, okay, but you can clearly do it. When you have two people games, then what happens is what you tend to do is you put the payoffs in a particularly simple form. So basically you have player one, okay, and then you basically are going to write a matrix, okay? So, and I'm going to do it this way, and here's player two. Oh no, we want player two here. Okay, and so player one has, you know, strategy one from player one and strategy two from player two, and here's we do want player two up here. Okay, and here's player strategy one from player two and strategy two from player two, and then you can just again, if you have a game where everyone has the same payoffs, then just one matrix, but. Well, actually, let's just do the general thing because it's actually easier. So what this is just like here, 1, 1, there's a payoff. 1, 1, well, actually, why don't I just do this pi? I'll write the general form. pi 1 of 1, 1, pi 2 of 1, 1, okay? And then here's player 2 over here. Player 2's up here. Okay, and then here's player 2 strategy, and then the payoff is pi 1 of 1, 2, pi 2 of 1, 2. Okay, and then et cetera. Okay, and then you do pi 1 of 2, 1, pi 2 of 2, 1, pi 1 of 2, 2, pi 2 of 2, 2. Okay, and so then when you specify the game, you just write down these numbers. Okay, everything else is just implied. So for instance, the game I'm going to give as the example is called Prisoner's Dilemma. It's probably the most famous game, and actually it's a pretty interesting history of it, which I will see how far we get in terms of, you know, actually figuring out what the, I mean, in some level it's trivial to do what the game does, and I'm going to solve the game right now, but the but you'll see it does something very non-intuitive, and the question is, why is that? And actually it took about 40 years to figure out why it's so non-intuitive. Okay, and so what happens is that this is how you specify the game, and then basically you name the strategies, but we can call them one or two, and then you just put in the matrix. Okay, so the fact that this is one and this is two is all sort of very mnemonic because of the nature of matrices. And so here is the actual game. Okay, so this is one example of a prisoner's dilemma.
By the way, yeah. On your matrix there, I think it's
yeah.
two of one. On the left,
pi one.
The very left, the label on the column.
Player. Well, so the idea is that this is player one's. Oh yes, two of one. Right. Player, yeah, so it's player one's, I don't know how to do it, but, and usually we just give them names. Why don't I just give it names? Player one, strategy one. That way, it's, because everything's always just sort of implied.
Player one, strategy two.
Player one, strategy two. Okay, and then this is player two. Two, strategy one, and this is player two, strategy two. Okay, and then you never ever write them out. Okay, you just write down the little table. Okay, and everything else is just sort of implied. Okay, and again, it's a completely equivalent. And here again, the problem is, you know, you got to draw lines, and you have to draw, you know, sort of hard to see how you won't. Well, I mean, it's easy to see, but it's just less writing, and it's easier to do tables and graphs, and so this is sort of the standard thing, okay? So, well, so far, I've only defined things, and so now, let me talk about Prisoner's Dilemma a little bit, okay? Okay, so Prisoner's Dilemma is a two-person game, okay? You know, there's a strategy for player one, there's a strategy for player two, and it's actually a symmetric game in the sense that if you relabel players one and two, they have the same incentive. So, you know, in order to be a symmetric game, this, you know, these have to be the same, which they are, and then these have to be sort of flipped. Okay, because if player one does strategy one, player two does strategy two, then player one gets zero and player two gets five, but if player two does strategy one, player one does strategy two, then player one gets five and player two gets zero. Okay, so what happens is a lot of times when, so this game's called a symmetric game because the players actually have exactly the same payoffs, and the only difference is that one guy is, who's often called, one guy's called the rogue player, one guy's called the column player, and so their payoff matrices are transposes of each other. Okay, so if the payoffs for player one and player two are transposed, then the game's called symmetric. And if the game's called symmetric, often they will only show you one payoff matrix. And then the other payoff matrix is, you know, related by transposition. Okay, But I think what I did is I, at least in the notes, I didn't do that last thing, but lots of times when you're reading stuff, there's only one matrix. And if there's only one matrix, then the game is a symmetric game, and you can get the payoffs for all the players just by transposing appropriately. Okay, and then there's a similar thing you can do for more player games, but the thing is, it's sort of nice to be able to do matrices, and so we're going to do two-player games because they're easier to write down. Okay, so let me tell you a little bit about... so this is a general definition, and now I'm on to the first example. Okay, so let me tell you a little bit about Prisoner's Dilemma. Okay. And then this is also, it'll be Prisoner's Dilemma plus a little bit of what it means to solve the game. Okay? So, we'll do cooperate, defect. Okay, and we have 4-4-0-5-5-0-1-1. Okay, that's the game. All right, let me solve the game, and then I'll explain why the solution is extremely unsatisfying. Okay, so it turns out that solving the game is extremely simple. Okay. And so von Neumann's definition, which of course is the same as Nash's definition for the extended case that he did, but his idea was, he says, well, here's a situation where you know, these are the rewards, these are the payoffs for the players, and everybody's goal is to maximize their reward, okay, to maximize their utility. So payoff or utility is the same thing, okay. And what happens is that he says, so if you have a choice of strategies, it's always in this context where the other player is doing something. Okay. And your idea is to maximize your payoff given what the other player is doing. Right? And so what you're always trying to do here is you're trying each player maximizes his or her pick, okay? And there's no altruism in this game because you're maximizing your own payoff, okay? And that's what makes game theory different than, it's not a global optimization problem, it's a series of local optimization problems, okay? And there's a Nash equilibrium for the game, which is sort of everybody has no incentive to change the strategy, okay, in the sense that they're each one trying to optimize his or her own payoff, and you know, given what they think the other players are going to do. And everyone is assumed to be reasonably intelligent so that you know, they assume the other players are rational and they're rational, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. So what happens is, let's say we're player one. Let's just sort of write the payoff matrix of player one, just to have it here. For player one. Okay, so it's 4, and here again we're going to do cooperate defect. Again, we'll interpret those later. For player one. 4-0-5-1. Okay. So what happens is that for player one, so this is a strategy for player two. Okay, so this is player two coming up here. Okay. And here's a strategy for player two here. Okay. And player one says, well, it doesn't matter what player two does, okay? In the sense of, if player two plays this strategy, I'm better off getting 5 than I am 4. And if player two plays this strategy, I'm better off getting 1 than 0. So I'm always better off playing this strategy, okay? And so this says that, there's a word for this, it says that D dominates C. Okay, and what that means is that it doesn't matter what the other player does, you do better. Okay, and so he said, well, why would you ever do this? Because, you know, whatever the other guy does, you can get a bigger payoff by playing B than you can by playing C. Okay? And so then let's look at the payoff matrix for player two. Well, it's the same. Okay, so payoff matrix for player two is, here's cooperate strategy. Okay, and so here's, so now we flipped it, right? So this is the player one strategy. And so when it's done this way, they're the same. They have the same incentives. Okay, so it's 4, 0, 5, 1. Okay, because again, now we flip 2 and 1. So this is player one now, and now we're looking at player two. Or we could look at this matrix that look as a function of the rows. Okay, actually, why don't I do that? That's more standard. Okay, so now what happens is, so we did player one. Okay, but now what we do is we look at player two. Okay, and if player one plays C, wait a minute, what am I doing? Wait, I have to do the wait. 5 is 4. Something's really wrong here. Oh, right. Right. Wait. I have to do it the other way. I'm sorry. This is how I think about it, and I'm not able to translate it. Okay. So again, if we then flip 2 and 1, then again we have 4 and 5 and 0 and 1. Only now this is player one. So going back into the standard notation doesn't work for me. This is how I think about it. Okay. So this is player one, and again we're in that same situation where you're better off playing B. Okay. So when you go through here, everybody's better off playing B, and there's no incentive to change to C because you know whatever the other player does, you'll get a bigger payoff if you get C. So what you do is, this is actually a solution method for the game. Again, the idea is everybody is getting the biggest payoff they can, subject to what the other players are doing. And so the solution to the game, is everybody defects with a payoff is equal to 1. Okay, and again, and the reason is, again, because if the first player plays C, then the second player gets a bigger payoff playing D than C, and if the first player does D, you're still better off playing D. Okay, so. And you know, and this is all well known. Okay, so and you read von Neumann's book, and it's just an example of a game that you can solve. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And again, and the definition. I didn't write down the definition. The definition of a solution. Okay, is that each player has no incentive to change the strategy. And I think later on I actually have what the solution is. Sorry. Okay. And basically what that says is that basically pi of the solution. The payoff function for that guy's strategy and everyone else's strategy is greater than or equal to pi I of anything else. Okay. So that says that given that everybody's doing what they're doing, I have no incentive to change my strategy because I can't get a better payoff. Okay. And that's the statement of what you're looking for. You're trying to maximize your payoff given what everybody else is doing, but everyone else is trying to maximize their payoff given what you're doing. You know, and so that's it's a self-consistent kind of problem. But again, it's not a global maximum of what everybody's trying to locally maximize their own payoff. Okay. Okay. And so actually, it took until 1950 for people to realize that this. Presents a conundrum. Okay, from the point of view of game theory, it's a perfectly well-defined game with a perfectly well-defined solution. You can show it's the only that DB is the only Nash equilibrium. It's stable. You'll do this every time. Okay, all right. And so what happened in 1950 though is that I wrote down the names of the guys, Flood and Drescher. pointed out, they gave words to, they gave an interpretation to the scale. Okay? All right, so here's the interpretation, where you say, so C is, it's called prisoner's dilemma because it's prisoners, all right? And they're there and they're getting interrogated, and if they both tough it out and cooperate with each other, which means, you know, don't admit anything, then they both walk and they get a payoff, they each get a payoff of 4 because they both walked, okay? Then, if they both, if they both confess, which is the fact, sometimes, yeah, okay, so if they both confess to the crime, then they both go to jail, but they get, like, some small amount of time off for good behavior, all right? And then they both get paid off for 1, okay? And if one confesses and the other one toughs it out, then the guy who toughs it out gets the book thrown at him, and the guy who confesses gets a new identity, and, you know, okay. And so what happens is that compared to both toughing it out, the reward is higher to the guy who defects, okay? So that's 5 is bigger than 4, okay? But then the guy who was a stand-up guy is, you know, the book gets thrown at him and it's really bad for him, okay? And if they, but if they both confess, then they both go to jail, and that's clearly not as good as toughing it out, okay? And what happens is they just say, well, if you're thinking about the Pareto problem, Pareto means that the utility of the population is maximized. The population utility is maximized by this one, CC, by where they cooperate, okay, where they're both standardized. Okay, but from the point of view of game theory, it's completely unstable, right? You know, that defecting, you know, each person has his own incentive to defect. All right, and so in 1950, Flood and Drescher pointed this out, and, you know, so the game is completely well defined as a game. But they pointed, and, you know, in the solutions and the book and all this, but they pointed out that based on this game, there's no incentive for anyone ever to cooperate ever, okay? And then they say, well, socially, that doesn't really make any sense, okay? And they said, so what is it about the game that is not correct? Okay, so it turns out that this game is completely correct. I mean, if you have a one-shot game, then this is the Nash equilibrium, and this is well known. And actually, I've lived things like this where, you know, it turns out that the trick to cooperation is repeating the game, okay? And so, because then you say, well, if they defect once, then they'll defect again, and then, you know, and so it's this thing that if you have a reputation, you know, if many times you say, if I cooperate now, more likely to cooperate, you know, people are more likely to cooperate with me, and if we all cooperate, then we'll get the higher payoff than if neither one does. See, because the point is that if you can get to this point, your payoff is 4 times as high at the Nash equilibrium, okay? And so, sort of in the 80s, people started looking at this question of, well, what happens if you repeat the games many times? And it turns out that if you do the most obvious things, you still can't get cooperation to be a stable Nash equilibrium, even if you repeat the games many times. And so, like, for instance, one thing that happened is that you'd say, well, okay, well, suppose we repeat the game n times. What about will cooperation be better? Because then you'd say, oh, but your payoff, if you can get everyone to cooperate, is so much bigger than if everybody's defecting, right? But it's like, you say, but let's look at the last step. Well, at the last step, you know, you cooperate, and then defect on the last step, right? Well, your payoff's that little bit higher, right? The fact, if everyone else is cooperating and you defect, your payoff is higher. And so, you know, and so everybody thinks that someone else is going to defect, and if they're going to defect on the last step, well, then you might as well defect on the step before, you know? Okay, and so it turns out that just repeating the game does not solve the problem, okay? And basically this problem remained unsolved. Like, why do people cooperate ever? It was more or less unsolved. And it was finally solved, at least what I think is sort of a, in a sort of satisfying manner in 1990. So it sort of took 40 years to figure out why people ever cooperate at all. And so there's a paper by Maskin and Fudenberg, which
We'll see. If I get to it, I think I'll go through it because it's sort of interesting to see how it's all and what the necessary ingredients were. And Naskin actually, this was a big piece of, he won the Nobel Prize in Economics in 2007, and actually this was a pretty big piece of it. It was figuring out why prisoner's dilemma, why people ever cooperate. Okay, so it turns out that, whether you defect all the time or whether you can't cooperate depends a lot on the game design. Okay, and that was actually sort of the broader impact of his work. I mean, he was a game theorist, but the idea was, defining the game so that the Pareto optimality, the utility to everybody is correlated to the Nash equilibrium and how do you design the games to do that. So as I said, what happened was that became a big deal, and then all of a sudden, game theory and economics is extremely popular right now. And that's part of the reason, because they actually were, these things, how do you design games to get societal benefit, turned out to be pretty influential. Okay, but back to prisoner's dilemma. Okay, so the question is it clear the solution to prisoner's dilemma and how, that if you just play it one time, it always pays to screw the other guy. Okay, because again, it doesn't matter what the other guy does, your payoff will be better, all right? And this is what people talk about reputation. It's sort of the thing behind brands, right? That, if you have a manufacturer who's selling you shampoo, or whatever, okay, old shampoo, if you never buy shampoo again, they might as well put water in the bottle, right? Because they get all the money and don't have to spend anything for it. And so this is sort of the idea behind branding, is to create some sort of incentive to have, to get repeats and iterate the game. So this is called, in economics, there's a lot about sort of reputation. Okay, and reputation is exactly taking the one-shot game and where you're certain to be screwed and trying to put it into a context where it's repeated. Okay, so that's sort of a very basic thing, but again, it took a really long time to figure out. And in that sense, it was very useful to sort of see how, in that sense, it was sort of, von Neumann's idea that you can sort of, take sort of social conundrums and write them in a mathematical basis is sort of, this is a great illustration. Yeah.
I guess perhaps this is missing the point a little, right? Like, I'm wondering if it's possible to sort of more precisely say what it means for each player to be trying to optimize their payoff. Because, like, for example, if you just say the words, each player is trying to optimize your payoff.
Yeah.
It might seem natural to you that each player would look at, the payoff matrix.
Yeah.
And figure out what the, essentially find the, what you call Pareto optimum.
The Pareto optimum.
And go to it. So, like, is there a more precise definition?
The precise thing is that everybody does a strategy where they have no incentive to change. Okay. And it's exactly this thing of, do you feel like you're a sucker, right? I don't know. I just remember when I was in college and there was some guy who would steal my, he would come and he would get the homework from me every week, right? And you just feel, and it's like, oh, gee, I'm a sucker, right? Because that feeling, right, of, you could cooperate and do your homework together, or you could have the other guy do it and take it from him, and which one's better, right? And for the person who gets the homework, obviously, it's better just to have someone else do your homework for you. So, there's this sort of, and then you say, well, why doesn't everyone do that? And it's not because your payoff is worse, it's other factors. It's your reputation to be around just taking people's homework, right? People know you're a schmuck. And that's the payment. You see what I mean? It's sort of outside the game of, I had to work, 20 hours to do this, and he got the same, and he didn't have to work, and so therefore he got, it's a one-time game, he did better, right? And that's the question. If you do this so well, how can you do it where no one person has an incentive to screw the other people?
I mean, let's look at it another way, right? If you have rational agents playing this game,
yeah.
The rational agents will know, like, for example, in this game, probably there's some, like, a priori way you can figure out that if there is an optimal strategy, it's the same for everybody, right? Like if defect is better than cooperate, then both players will defect and so forth, because it's all like.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I mean, they're mixed. Yeah. And we'll get to mixed, but yeah.
And then, if everybody, if you're perfectly rational, you know that the other player is perfectly rational, you very right. quickly.
Right, but the fact is, I mean, the thing is, you'd say, oh, this is the puzzle. It's better for everybody if we all cooperate, but if everybody cooperates except for one guy, that one guy does better than everybody else. And that's the fundamental dilemma, right? That if everybody cooperates except for one guy, that one guy, gets the biggest payoff. And so how do you keep that one guy from defecting? Okay. And the answer is, and this is why this is so important in the social context, is that it's not in the game because the payoff is bigger. So you have to change the game so that the payoff is not bigger. And again, there's this thing of, if someone comes and takes your, you do the homework and they just copy it from you, you ostracize them. So you change the payoff so that you're not in this situation. Okay. And it's something that's the great insight that Gutenberg and Maskin did was they showed that just having the same game with these payoffs but repeated many times. And also it turned out that I'll tell you what the conditions were. So there are two things that were necessary. So there's this question that if you knew that it was the last time you're playing, always there'll be somebody who goes for the defect, right? Because, all right, and this happened actually in the early days of high temperature superconductivity, which is, I don't think you guys were born yet, but what happened was that out of nowhere, there was high temperature superconductivity, and everybody was like convinced that they were just about to win the Nobel Prize. And what happened was that sort of, the standards and ethics of the field were pathetic. Because, when people stealing and whatever, because they said, oh, but if I get all the credit, I'm going to win the Nobel Prize. And, and again, because of this payoff. And so your idea that, scientists are honest and full of integrity, I mean, it's only because of this reputational thing that, but we're faced in this situation where, well, I'll give you an example. So there's a guy, and he has some preliminary data, and he wanted to get more data, and and then they squeeze him out of the paper saying, this is going to be the experiment that wins the Nobel Prize. And of course, nobody won the Nobel Prize except for the original guys. But just the backbiting, and the hiding, and the stealing, and it was amazing. Okay, and again, it was this thing that, given one time, people aren't that. So people do say, well, if I can get the payoff and screw this other guy, they're perfectly willing to do it. Okay. And yet, the thing that keeps, society from, sort of degenerating into, total ridiculousness is this idea that you have to live your life and that you're going to be in the field for, 20, 30 years or whatever, and that any one interaction, there's no point maximizing your payoff from one interaction because you're going to have many interactions. Okay, so now it's thing number one. And then the thing in terms of what was required in the mathematical model was that there had to be some discounting, right? Because remember I told you this thing that if at the very last time it pays the defect, right? Well, it turns out if you say, well, but the last time we play, I don't know when it is, and it's going to be far in the future, and then you say, benefit in the future is of less utility than benefit now. Then it sort of takes away that effect of the very last time, leading to a defection, then everybody defects because they know they're going to be screwed, and so that you might as well screw them first, okay? So that's thing number one. And people sort of understood that pretty early in the early 80s. But what happened was when they went through the mathematics of the model, it turned out that what it meant was not that defecting became, it was clear if you get a higher payoff from not defecting all the time, but it didn't actually select out cooperation as an Nash equilibrium. Okay, and again, this was all done in the context of these evolutionary dynamics that I'll do for you. Okay, and it turned out the key other thing. It turned out there's a huge degenerate set of strategies with all sorts of different payoffs, which were all stable to people coming in with different strategies, in the sense that, if you came in with a different strategy, you didn't do better. I mean, and again, there would be this thing, if you have this social system where everybody's busy cooperating, and then one guy comes in and defects, that one guy who comes in and defects gets all the marbles, and you see, everyone else gets zero, and he gets everything, and
You know, it's not stable to a defector. Okay, but it turns out that, you know, again, if you repeat many times, you are stable to a defector. But it turns out there are lots and lots of strategies that are all stable to defectors. And the insight of Fudenberg and Maskin was, it turns out, though, that there's only one that is stable to people screwing up the strategy. You know, where you think somebody screwed you, but really you were wrong, and, you know, you're sort of mean to them by mistake. And it turns out the most robust of the strategies is actually to cooperate. Okay, and that was the insight, that that is evolutionarily stable if it is impossible to implement a strategy perfectly. Okay, then it turns out cooperation works. But if you assume you can implement a strategy perfectly, it turns out, you know, the thing wasn't solved. And that's why it took 40 years to solve, you know, to sort of realize that was an important aspect, is the ability to mess up was critical in sort of understanding why cooperation erupts. Okay, and again, you know, Nobel Prize in economics, that's pretty good, right? Okay, so, but again, the idea of, like, how do you, okay, so did that help? Okay, so again, it's this idea that if you just do it once, then, okay, then the point is you can always do better by screwing the other guy if there's only one interaction. Okay, and there you are. Okay, so that's a famous game, and now is it clear that this is a solution? So this method of solution of, well, like this, the payoff, you know, it doesn't matter what this guy did. My payoff is higher. That's called the method of solution by the method of dominant strategies. And this method of solution can be iterated. So what can happen is that you, and you'll have a homework problem. I'm not sure whether it's going to be homework or tutorial because I just put problems in. But you'll have one where you can, you know, sometimes you have, like, initially one strategy is dominated, but once that's eliminated, then there's another strategy that's eliminated, that's dominated, and you can eliminate that. And so there's a certain class of games you can solve that way. Okay, if you can solve it that way, then what you get is a pure Nash equilibrium. Okay, in the sense that there is a strategy that is the optimum one, in the sense that nobody has an incentive to change. Okay, and again, you just defect. You know, everybody defects because that's, you know. If not, they're a schmuck, right? Because someone else will defect, and they'll be a schmuck. Okay, all right. So that's game number one. Okay, and so now let me do another game. Okay, and again, this is, I'm doing symmetric two-person games because they're simple. Okay, and so here's another game which is quite familiar, probably. Which is called rock, paper, scissors. Okay, and again, I don't know why this game is popular, to be honest, but nonetheless, we play this game. Okay, so here is player two, rock, paper, scissors. Here's player one, rock, paper, scissors. Okay, and again, from the point of view of the mathematics, the fact that they're called rock, paper, scissors is irrelevant. The only thing that actually has significance is the payoff matrix. Okay, and again, so if you play against yourself, then, you know, if you get rock and rock, you get nothing. You know what I mean? Nobody wins and nobody loses. And here is, I think I did this right. Rock against scissors. Rock beats scissors. Scissors loses to rock. Yes, this is good. One minus one. Yeah, paper beats rock. Minus one, one. And one minus one. OK, so that's the game. OK, and it's exactly what you used to play, right? Rock, paper, scissors, shoot, right? And then you, OK. And as you know, rock beats scissors, and scissors beats paper, and paper beats rock. Okay, and so what happens is that, you know, if you picked rock every time, then the other person would pick paper, and you would lose 100% of the time. And it doesn't matter which pure strategy you pick, beating, you know, if you always pick scissors, and the other person would pick rock, and you would lose 100% of the time. And again, and so there is no pure Nash equilibrium for. For this game. Okay. And again, that's just the statement, if I pick one strategy, you know, I know that, you know, that there is a strategy that will beat it, and then I, you know. Okay, and so then we sort of know from having played rock, paper, scissors what the optimum strategy is. It's not very good, but you just randomly pick one of the three. Because then you say, well, okay, my chances of not losing are, you know, my chances of winning are one-third, my chances of tying are one-third, and my chances of losing are one-third. And sort of intuitively, you know that you can't do any better than that. And that's in some sense why, actually, this is why we play rock, paper, scissors, right? Where you're doing something where, I don't know, you're picking something. It's like picking a random number. It's like flipping a coin, right? Only, okay. And again, the idea is the game has the incentive strategy that you know, you're doing the best you can to win the game, and the best you can to win the game is to pick randomly. And so it's a fair game in that sense where, you know, it really is like a 50-50 free shot whether you win rock, paper, scissors. I mean, assuming you iterate it until somebody wins. I mean, if you both do rock, then you go again. Okay. And so again, this is sort of has the nice thing about it where you're playing a game, but the game actually is sort of designed so that the incentive, so that the you have no incentive except to choose randomly between rock, paper, and scissors. Okay. And so again, what you do in this game is you pick randomly. With equal probability, from one of the three strategies, from the three strategies, okay, and when this is the optimum, this is what's called a mixed Nash equilibrium. Okay. So again, a pure Nash equilibrium is that there is like one strategy that beats all the others, okay, and that's what this is, or you know, one strategy that is at least as good as all the others. Because to be precise, a definition of a Nash equilibrium is that you have no incentive to change, but there could be one that's just as good. But you know, as long as your payoff doesn't improve, you have no incentive to change. Okay. So this is one with a pure Nash equilibrium, where you have no incentive to change from, you know, defecting, okay? And this is going to be a case of a mixed Nash equilibrium, where you won't have any incentive to defect, to change your strategy from picking randomly, but it's no one strategy. Okay. And so, and again, the reason why we do this game is that everybody's familiar with this game, and so it turns out it's extremely popular as an example, okay? So it turns out then what we have to do is we have to define mixed strategies. Okay. So I will just sort of, I have 1 minute, so let me write just. Okay. So again, keeping in mind rock, paper, scissors. Okay, it's really natural to define a mixed strategy in terms of just picking randomly, you know, from a okay, and then looking ahead to this evolutionary, you know, sort of putting evolutionary dynamics onto the games, and sort of, you know, having the strategies be chosen using some sort of fitness kind of idea. Again, then the picture is that you have a set of different populations, and that you have sort of some organisms do strategy, you know, do rock, and some paper, some organisms do paper, and some organisms do scissors, and then they reproduce based on whether they won or lost the game, and then you see what the population is at long time. Okay, so mixed strategies are, well, actually, I'll do it next time. Okay, so that's where I'll start. Okay. Okay, and then the goal of next lecture is I will actually show you that when you play rock, paper, scissors, you're using the optimal strategy. That picking randomly is actually the Nash equilibrium for that model. Okay, so that's where I'll stop.